truth seekers. It is I once again, Brad Friedman, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Glad to be here. Glad to have you with us coast to coast and around the globe. Yeah, I'm Brad from bradblog.com. Love you to stop on by our chat room over there tonight and participate in the festivities, if you can call them that. It has been a hell of a week, and I'm here all week long sitting in for Mike. Mike and Kathy will be back next Monday, never fear. They're doing well, just enjoying some time off. Although, did you notice the time that they took off? Well, first it was Labor Day, so I had to work on Labor Day. And then Wednesday, Obama's big speech. We had to do live coverage all night long. Well, we didn't have to. We wanted to. It was a crazy night. And tomorrow, 8th anniversary of 9/11. Should be an interesting show. I'll give you some a couple of teasers as we move forward as far as what we've got planned for tomorrow. But I'll tell you, he picked a hell of a week to leave me here, didn't he? We are broadcasting from beautiful downtown Burbank. Lovely and sunny here in the studios of K-Talk AM 1150. You can give us a call as the hour moves on, as the show moves on, at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. And as I said, a hella big show tonight. I mean, a hella big show. Coming up momentarily, Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, used to give the presidential daily briefings to George Bush Sr. So if you ever had a question for a CIA guy, now's your chance to get it in at 877-520-1150. We're going to talk about the torture investigations. We're going to find out if, in fact, torture investigations really would demoralize the CIA. Sure, they may have broke the law, but we can't possibly investigate and prosecute. It would make them sad. We're also going to talk about the new CIA director, Leon Panetta, who I believe should resign, given his obstruction or attempted obstruction into the investigation into torture. Coming up later, Ernest Hancock, libertarian, who you may have heard made some news a week or two ago. Ernest, who I've known for a while, brought a gun to a town hall meeting out there in Phoenix, Arizona. You may have heard about the guy that he was with. Chris is his name. He's the one who brought the assault rifle. Ernie just had a sidearm. He was a big Ron Paul guy. I'm going to ask him what the hell he was thinking. And then, later on in the show, in our third hour, Call the Kids and Wake the Neighbors, we're going to be playing for the first time on the air, on the broadcast air, the first time anywhere, extended clips from the deposition, the under oath deposition, the shocking, frankly, under oath deposition of FBI translator turned whistleblower Sybelle Edmonds. She gave a remarkable deposition about a month ago, almost exactly a month ago, the very beginning of August. It was released 2 weeks later in full, including on video, the entire transcript, the video. We ran it on bradblog.com. The allegations she makes of bribery and blackmail of current and former U.S. Congress members are stunning. The sale of nuclear secrets to the black market, as some of these officials, high-ranking officials at the State and Defense Department, not only participated in it, oversaw it, participated in it, she alleges. And, of course, she has some 9/11 things to say as well. But we are talking about infiltration of the U.S. government at the highest levels, some of our highest officials. She is an FBI translator who was listening to wiretaps of targets at the FBI, folks who were suspected of all of these things. And she was gagged twice by the George W. Bush administration. They used the rarely invoked draconian state secrets privilege to shut her up. So she hasn't been able to talk for years. Finally, she was deposed in a case in Ohio, and the Obama administration did not shut her up. And she answered all the questions, and the answers were absolutely stunning. We're going to play extended excerpts from that deposition for the first time on the air anywhere in the third hour, focusing largely on the congressional corruption. Yes, she names names. Yes, they are names that you will know. And you will want to tune in for that. So as I say, call the kids and wake the neighbors. Big enough show for you? If not, tomorrow, 9/11, 8th anniversary, we're going to have John Farmer. He's got a new book out called Ground Truth. John Farmer was the senior counsel, one of the senior counsels on the 9/11 commission. And he's alleging that what the government and the military officials told the told the public and the commission was almost, quote, was almost entirely and inexplicably untrue. Mind you, this is a member of the 9/11 commission saying that what the public was told and what the commission was told by officials, quote, was almost entirely and inexplicably untrue. We're going to ask him about that, no matter what Glenn Beck thinks about it. What do you think of that? Because after all, if we take Glenn Beck's advice, he tells us we should, well, what does he say?
America, if you want answers to reasonable questions in this unreasonable time, stand up.
Okay.
Come on, follow me.
Ah. We're not going to follow you, Glenn, but we are going to ask reasonable questions in what are unreasonable times, no matter what the hell you say about it, even though you lied and said you wanted people to ask reasonable questions. You didn't, because when Van Jones, of course, Obama's Green Jobs advisor, dared to ask reasonable questions. He didn't even dare to ask. He just signed a petition that, along with family members of 9/11 victims, asking some pretty reasonable questions. You know, things like, why did the Secret Service allow George W. Bush to sit there for so long after he had heard that we were under attack on 9/11? Seems like a reasonable question to me. Not apparently to Glenn Beck. That, despite what he has to say, about
I told you yesterday that there are three principles that this show is going to drum through in the next week.
He means lie.
It may be our mantra for a very long time.
By mantra, he means
question
our lie.
Question with boldness. It's something that changed my life that Thomas Jefferson said. Question.
Really?
Honest questioning.
Really? Did that change
question
your life?
With boldness. Then the second step is,
unless
once
you're Van
you
Jones,
find
of course,
the truth, whatever it is, hold to it. Hold to the truth. And the third
unless
one,
unless it's the truth you don't like.
Without fear.
Without
if
fear.
If you truly ask, would Thomas Jefferson called honest questions with a sincere heart.
Uh-huh. What will happen?
I have
You'll
found
be railroaded,
that the answers
lynched?
In all aspects of your life may take you to a very uncomfortable place.
Really? Like what?
Tonight, they're going to take you, and this week, they're going to take you to places that you don't want to go.
What? Like the president is a bad guy?
Nobody wants to think that our president is a bad guy.
Oh. What?
When you hear evidence to the contrary, you have a decision to make.
Do you?
Will you bury your head in the sand, refusing to believe because
will
it
you,
doesn't
Glenn?
Fit your political agenda,
uh-huh,
or it just doesn't fit with your comfort level?
Uh-huh. Comfort
or
level, Glenn.
Will you hold to the truth, whatever it is,
uh-huh,
so you can be part of the solution and not an enabler to the problem?
Thank you. I will
we
hold to the truth.
We must look at our country
good
not
idea
as today's politics, but the future place where our children will grow up.
Uh-huh.
Will they be free?
Okay. Good advice. Good advice from Glenn Beck there. Ask questions, hold to the truth, question with boldness, as Thomas Jefferson said. Unfortunately, Glenn Beck turned around and ran a guy, railroaded him out of office because he dared to ask questions. By the way, Thomas Jefferson's full quote was, question with boldness, even the existence of a God. Because if there be one, he must approve the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. He must more approve the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. Question with boldness, even the existence of a God. Unless you're on Fox News, don't question the existence of a God. Don't question what happened on 9/11, even though one of the commissioners says that what we were told was simply untrue. So I'm going to take the opportunity, hopefully tomorrow, to ask John Farmer, the senior counsel of the 9/11 commission, some of those questions that Glenn Beck found so incredibly inappropriate, and as he said, made Van Jones dangerous. And he said, what? The FBI, they must be, the FBI is incompetent to allow Van Jones that close to the president. Oh, really? Someone over at Fox News is incompetent to let you that close to a television camera, Glenn Beck. They're not incompetent. They're just cynical bastards, and they don't give a damn about the public airwaves. We do, so we're going to ask questions here tonight with Ray McGovern in a moment, Ernie Hancock after that, and Sybil Edmonds' remarkable deposition. And your calls, all ahead, right here on the Mike Malloy Program. I'm Brad Friedman, sitting in for Mike. Stick with us. Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Thanks for joining us. We've got Ray McGovern momentarily. Wanted to remind folks, stop by the chat room at bradblog.com. If you go to the very top item and you click on click here for the chat room, then you'll be brought in there. Agent 99 is keeping an eye on things there, and looks like all the gang is there. It's a very lively discussion over there, so jump on over and say hello. All right, we're joined by Ray McGovern, fellow who I've gotten to know him over the years. Spoke to him originally back in the deep, dark days of the Bush presidency. Bush Jr. Remember that? Ray McGovern is a 27-year CIA analyst. He writes for, among other places, Consortium News, Op-Ed News. He also serves on the steering group of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS. Great to have you with us, Ray. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks, Brad. Good to be with you.
Now, we did talk back in the dark days. It felt like dark days back then. The sun is out a little bit more these days, but frankly, not a whole lot. We're going to talk about some of that. Before we do, though, Ray, give us a quick idea. As a CIA analyst for 27 years, what did you do? You actually briefed George Bush Sr., did you not?
Yes. I worked prominently on two publications that are sort of the supreme genre of the intelligence product. One's called The President's Daily Brief, and the other one is called National Intelligence Estimate. During Nixon and during Ford, I helped prepare The President's Daily Brief. It's a short, maybe 8-9-page document prepared 6 days a week, done the day before, updated overnight. In those days, we used to send it off to the White House without any real personal contact with the people who would be reading it. When Ronald Reagan came into office, we had already approached him out in Pacific Palisades and got him pretty much interested in this kind of treatment. So when he came into office, he said, "Now, George Bush, you and Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, my national security assistant, I want you all to get the same treatment that I've been getting, even as just president-elect." And George Bush said, great, that's what I advocate. Now, do you want to be included? And Reagan said, "Well, I don't know, it's awful early. Tell you what, why don't you guys come brief me at 11 after you've gotten the poop from these one-on-one experts?" So that's the way it worked out. Very rarely do we see the president, but we saw all these other individuals 6 days a week, Saturdays at their homes, and we worked in teams. So every other day, every other morning, I'd be seeing some combination of the vice president, secretaries of state, secretary of defense, assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. And then we took the initiative to add the chairman of the Joint Chiefs because we thought that he, too, should be advised of what the president is being told every morning, 6 days a week. So that was really heady duty. It was in those days we were experienced analysts, so we were trusted. And it was one-on-one, and never did we in our wildest dreams think that a director would eventually decide to come down and stand behind us or behind the president as we briefed. That's what Tenet, of course, succeeded in doing in order to get more face time with President Bush. And you can imagine what a dampening effect, a chilling effect that would have.
That would have a chilling
on candor.
That would certainly have a chilling effect on candor, having your boss there. Also, I remember years ago you told me that Dick Cheney had come down to CIA, that was unprecedented to have a vice president actually coming down to the CIA headquarters and, again, looking over folks' shoulders like that. Got to get to a break. We're going to ask you about CIA, the investigation into torture. But if I don't even know if we have time for this one. But my question was, in your day, had you given a presidential daily briefing like the one that Bush got in August of 2001, saying that, you know, an enemy was about to attack the country, would there have been a reaction different than the one you ended up seeing? And I don't know if you can, when George Bush was there.
Well, very briefly, we know what Bush said. He turned to the briefer and said, okay, you've covered your ass now. You can go. That was the attitude. Yeah, lots of would have happened when I get back to headquarters, I tell you.
So this was not the way it used to work. Well, let's hope it doesn't work that way anymore with Obama in there. But we're going to talk about Obama, what he's doing. Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst. Much more with him and a big show ahead. Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us. Com in for the vacationing Mike Malloy. Mike and Kathy will be back on Monday. We are speaking with 27-year CIA analyst, now former CIA analyst, Ray McGovern. A lot of stuff I want to talk about with Ray. We'd love to take your questions as well if you'd like to ask Ray. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. We talked a bit. We did a bit of hammering on the previous administration. We're probably going to do more in a second on the use of torture by the CIA, the investigation into that. But this may gore the ox of the Obama administration a little bit, because when the news came out that Eric Holder, the Attorney General, was preparing to investigate the previous administration's use of torture, reportedly Leon Panetta, the new CIA director, threw a few fits. Apparently, he went over to the DOJ, tried to get them to not investigate. Reportedly, he had a shouting match with Rahm Emanuel, trying to get them to not investigate. It seems to me that this is not unlike what happened with the U.S. attorney purge, where you had these high-ranking officials calling up the Justice Department, calling up U.S. attorneys, calling up the White House and Karl Rove, and asking them either to investigate so-and-so or asking them, please don't investigate so-and-so if he happens to be a Republican. I found that was inappropriate then. I find it inappropriate now that Leon Panetta used his insider position to try to stop a lawful investigation into the illegal practice, the atrocious practice of torture. And I think he ought to step down. I think progressives ought to call for Panetta to step down the way we called for these other guys to step down when they obstructed justice. Ray McGovern, am I out of line in making that call when it comes to Leon Panetta?
Well, Panetta has been a terrific disappointment. He came with a fairly good reputation for integrity, and the notion was that he would actually become the CIA director. In other words, you know, somebody who would actually sort of, would you say, direct the agency, you know?
Well, that's his job, is it not?
Well, not if he's a creature of Congress. And that was the real tip-off for me. When he was doing his nomination proceedings, he sort of winked at them all and said, you know, I'm a creature of Congress first and foremost.
Mm.
Well, that's the kiss of death. What does that mean? That means that you're not an intelligence officer and never will be. It means that you shave and you cut and you kind of bob and weave and you make compromises and you work something out. That's not what intelligence is all about.
Did he say that to the folks at the CIA when he came into the job?
He said that to the Senate committee that was approving his nomination.
I see, that I'm a creature of Congress.
You know, we were all watching it on TV.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is that these folks that were ordering and orchestrating and approving the torture,
mm-hmm.
guess where they are now?
Where are they?
They're his senior staff, the head of his operation.
So there has been no accountability.
The deputy chief. Not only that, but John Brennan, one of Director Tenet's chief lieutenants, he found his way down into a very influential post in the National Security Council after being denied a position where the Senate would have to confirm him, namely CIA director or something like that. So what do we have here? We have the foxes in charge of the chicken coop, and we have Leon Panetta not acting as a director, but rather acting as a lawyer. He's arguing the case of these guys that, you know, the stakes are very, very large here, Brad.
Yeah.
Crimes have been committed. You know, the Cheneys of this world are trying to dismiss this as bona fide differences on policy.
Policy difference, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, torture is not a policy. Torture is a crime, okay? Torture is against the law, international as well as domestic law. 18 U.S.C. USC is not University of South Southern
right.
California.
U.S. Code.
U.S. Criminal Code, right? 18 U.S.C. 2441, the War Crimes Act, passed by a predominantly Republican legislature in 1996, okay? That's one of the laws that they can't get around. Now, let me just...
Add to that, Ray, by the way, the U.N. Treaty on Torture, and I know a lot of people say, well, let's avoid... The U.N., they don't make our laws. Well, in fact, Ronald Reagan signed that U.N. Torture Convention, and that is a treaty, and as Article 6 of the Constitution says, that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the U.S., shall be the supreme law of the land.
Right.
So there's no question about the legal issues here. If they committed torture, it's illegal. Period.
Sure. That's the so-called supremacy clause, and it applies not only to the Convention Against Torture, but to all the other Geneva agreements, and we have the Supreme Court endorsing that concept. So, what I was about to say is just to take half a step back and say, yeah, torture is wrong because it's against the law, right?
No.
Yeah, there are laws against torture, but torture isn't wrong because it's against the law. The laws are there because torture is wrong.
Right.
And the whole civilized world agreed on that after World War II and some of these atrocities happened. And up until the George W. Bush administration, everyone sort of agreed that torture was beyond the pale and certainly not as a matter of public policy. So we have a bunch of fellows now who worked for George Tenet, and we have Tenet himself sweating it out because he's demonstrably guilty of perjury as well as other things. You know, never mind torture, rendition, kidnapping, putting people in black holes without telling their wives or children, much less the Red Cross, you know.
Wait, who did you say was guilty of perjury and all this?
George Tenet.
Oh, Tenet, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
See, there was a kind of a Faustian bargain struck. And when people wonder why George Tenet, this relates to 9/11, so it might be sort of timely given what's coming up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
George Tenet had indeed warned that something really big was up. He tried to get Condoleezza Rice to tell the president. I don't know why he didn't tell the president himself. He saw him six mornings a week.
That's right. He was there.
Yeah.
That's right.
But that's his excuse. You know, he had his hair on fire by all accounts. And Richard Clark and other people do substantiate that. He was really worried that something's going to happen. You referred before to the president's daily brief of August 6, 2001. You know, August 6, what's that, 5 weeks before 9/11, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the title of that? Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., okay? And what did the president do? He went and watched a Little League baseball game. He didn't even ask people to lock the cockpit doors, for God's sake. And that's what the Israelis did years and years before that. All he had to do, it cost $700 to put a secure lock on the cockpit doors. Nobody could get in. That would have thwarted a lot of this stuff. So nothing was done. He didn't know what to do. Condoleezza Rice didn't know what to do. So nothing was done. So then 9/11 happens, okay? Now, here's the director of Central Intelligence with 34 urgent priority memos for the president warning that something like this is just about to happen, never mind the president's daily brief of August 6th. And, you know, directors of Central Intelligence keep a little disc of all this stuff, you know. And so Bush is really worried. And he goes to George Tenet and he says, George, I know you told me something like this is going to happen. But, you know, we don't need to go into that. I know you're very embarrassed because people think that you're responsible. And to a degree, you were because of all these things that fell through the cracks. So let's make a deal here. I won't fire you, George, if you do what I say and destroy that little disc that you have of all your warnings. Now, George Tenet breathed a great big sigh of relief. Sir, that's a great deal. And before you knew it, 13 days after 9/11, George Bush is out at CIA headquarters with his arm around George Tenet saying, we have the best intelligence service in the world, and largely because of the staff here and George Tenet, who is my man, okay? This, after the worst intelligence disaster and policy disaster, at least since Pearl Harbor. So what does that mean? Well, that means that George Tenet was doing the president's bidding no matter what he asked him to do. Mm. Torture? Yeah, sure. Yes, sir, I can torture. We don't have any interrogators, but I'll round up some. We'll do whatever you want. And not only that, we get to the perjury now. Before the 9/11 commission, here's George Tenet being sworn in with John McLaughlin, his deputy, okay? And he's asked by Timothy Romer is one of the commissioners, and he says, you know, I'd be interested in what you told the president during that critical month of August 2001.
Right.
You know, and so Tenet says, well, you know, I didn't talk to him at all. And Romer says, you never talked to him? And Tess says, no, I took some leave. And of course, the president was out there in Crawford. And Romer says, well, not even on telephone? No, okay. Now, what happens? That evening, after all the TV cameras are turned off, one of Tenet's little PR people calls the commission and says, you know, George Tenet misspoke. Actually, he did go and brief the president, actually out in Crawford on August the 17th. And then he, you know, he saw him again at the end of August when George Bush came back to town. And, you know, he just misspoke, okay? Now, why did he misspeak? Because he didn't want to, because he was fulfilling his part of the deal, Brad.
Yeah, he was trying to cover his ass in this deal that...
Cover Bush's ass is what's going on here.
Right.
Because, you know, it's really strange. This guy didn't have many smarts. He writes his memoirs, right?
Yeah.
He talks about On August the 17th, I went out to Crawford. Oh, man, it was such a revelation, such a great time. I got driven around by the president in his little...
So in his own book, George Tenet revealed his own perjury. Let me ask you this, because we're going to have to come up on a break here very momentarily. You say that Tenet destroyed a disc with 34 warning memos on it. Do we know this? How do we know that he destroyed this disc?
I was speaking figuratively here.
Okay,
What he did was agree to destroy his memory about all the... And of course, Richard Clark knows full well, and you look in Richard Clark's books and you'll see how many times Bush was...
I'm going to pin you down. I want to get an answer on this torture thing and whether it's appropriate. It certainly sounds appropriate to investigate, but whether Panetta was wrong to try to block it and whether it will demoralize the CIA. We're speaking with 27-year CIA veteran Ray McGovern. Much more straight ahead, including Sybil Edmonds, later tonight. Brad, here on The Molloy Show. Brad, back on the Molloy program, broadcasting live from Los Angeles for the next couple of several hours. Ernest Hancock coming up in the next hour, Desi Doyen with the green news, and yes, Wake the Kids and the Neighbors, Sybil Edmonds' unheard testimony. Unheard because no one else in the media has picked it up. We're going to play extended excerpts from her extraordinary deposition given a few weeks ago, the former FBI translator. We're speaking with Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, gave presidential briefs directly to folks like George Bush Sr. And Ray, I'm going to push you to be quick with your answers here because we've got just a couple of minutes, and I want to see if I can get in a call here. But on the CIA, was it appropriate, in your opinion, for Panetta to try to block this lawful investigation into torture by Eric Holder's investigation? Is that the appropriate thing for a CIA director to do?
Well, you and I know that it's not appropriate if he's director, if he's the agency, if he sees his role as the agency's lawyer, which apparently he does, then there's nothing unlawful about him pleading their special causes. The stakes are very high here. His main advisors and his senior staff are liable for prosecution for war crimes. The war crime statute includes very severe penalties, including capital punishment, for those if under their custody detainees die, and we know that at least 100 have. So this is big stakes here. And let me just leave you with this thought, and that is that I think that Panetta and, to a degree, President Obama are afraid. I never thought I'd hear myself saying this, but I think they're afraid of the CIA. And you look in history, you look to that incredible book written recently by Jim Douglas, JFK and the Unspeakable. He makes a very, very persuasive case that it was President Kennedy's the animosity that built up between him and the CIA after the Bay of Pigs and the Joint Chiefs of Staff because he was reaching out to the Russians and so forth and so on. It's a very well-researched book, and his conclusion is very alarming. And so if you're asking why Obama and Panetta are going very, very kid glovish with the CIA, I think part of the reason or the explanation is they're afraid of these guys because these guys have a whole lot to lose if justice takes its course. And that's why I think Attorney General Holder is to be applauded. I'm really just delighted to have somebody from the Bronx, where I grew up, try to do something to wipe out the blot that Colin Powell has put on the Bronx.
Even though it's a narrow investigation, you still applaud it, but Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, you're saying that there is reason to be concerned about the CIA, that Barack Obama should be concerned. Having been there 27 years, I guess you know what you're talking about, but that's a chilling thought, I gotta say, Ray.
Well, read the book, James Douglas, JFK and the Unspeakable. You know, Brad, as you probably know, there are two CIAs, okay? The one that was set up by Truman to give him the straight scoop without any fear or favor, and then this covert action arm, which really doesn't belong in this agency, but is the one that is entitled, so to speak, by one sentence in the National Security Act of 1947, which says the Director of Central Intelligence shall perform such other functions and duties as the President shall direct. That gives the President the ability to use the CIA as his own personal Gestapo, and I use the word advisedly. The only check on that are what used to be called the Oversight Committees of the Congress. Now they're called the Overlook Committees of the Congress.
Indeed.
So it's pretty scary. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and that's real scary. I want to recommend folks, Ernest Hancock wrote a 5-part series over at bradblog.com on the history of CIA torture, alleging that it goes back 50 years and has been used as a tool of American empire. I actually wanted to get your opinions on that, Ray, but we're out of time. We're going to have to do this at another time. I do want to thank you, though, Ray, for all of these years that you have spoken up without fear about the concerns you've had, because I think you have the creds to speak about it. So thanks, Ray. Keep speaking out. Ray McGovern, you can read his stuff at Consortium News, Op-Ed News. Google his name. A lot of stuff out there. Always great to talk to you, Ray.
You're most welcome, Brett.
All right. Whew, boy, that was kind of chilling. All right, we're coming back with Green News, Ernest Hancock, and Sabelle Edmonds, Wake the Kids and the Neighbors. Much more straight ahead.
Mitt.
A creeped out Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike Malloy. Man, I don't know if you heard that hour beforehand that we just did with Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA analyst, who said that essentially Barack Obama has reason to be concerned about the CIA and what may come of him. That was kind of creepy. If you missed it, we'll have the podcast up later on at MikeMalloy.com. I'll post it over at BradBlog.com as well. And if you're not yet creeped out enough, coming up, well, we got two creepy hours straight ahead for you. Ernest Hancock, the libertarian who brought a gun to a Barack Obama healthcare event out in Phoenix, Arizona. And if that ain't creepy enough, Sabelle Edmonds, the former FBI translator turned whistleblower, gagged for years under the state secrets privilege by the Bush administration, speaks out on the record under oath in public for the first time. We're going to play extended excerpts from her stunning deposition in which she names names of Congress members you will know, you will know and love, or not love, still serving, who she alleges were bribed, blackmailed by the by agents of the Turkish government. And she attests to this that she heard as a translator listening to wiretaps. She was hired after 9/11 at the FBI. Never before heard on the air. We're going to play extended excerpts next hour. So Ernest is coming up shortly, but just because I'm so creeped out, let's lighten things up a little bit, if you can call it that. Hey, Dez.
Hey, how's it going?
Desi Doyen joins us, my producer and my co-host on the Green News Report, heard on your favorite radio stations around the country. And if it's not heard on the station you're listening to now, call them and demand it. It's free. It's only 6 minutes. They can drop us a note at greennews@bradblog.com, and we'll add them to the affiliates list. We'd love to have them. Des, I was just up on the roof for some reason, looking out over the hills. Fires still burning, I guess backfires from the from these fires out here in L.A. County?
Yeah, that's what we understand. It's the station fire. Again, it's the largest fire in L.A. County history and one of the largest in California state history. And it's still burning out there. They don't expect to have full containment until next week, probably the middle of next week. And they've been, you know, lighting backfires. They've been able to protect a lot of the residences and buildings because it's, you know, it's creeping into an area that was the Angeles National Forest, a rural area, wilderness, but it's been
that it's not
spreading out.
It's not threatening homes anymore.
All right. So.
Our Green News Report, this was today's report, recorded just a few hours ago, and we'll play it. We'll come back another minute or two to talk about it, and then we'll bring on Ernest Hancock. Tony, light it up.
It's Thursday, September 10, 2009.
World's largest solar farm coming.
Great.
To China.
Oh.
Air pollution, bad for you.
You don't say.
Plus, oil, toil, and trouble.
Very tantalizing. All of that and more straight ahead. Prepare for 6 minutes of green news and commentary. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Toil and trouble. All right, what do you have for us today, Des?
Well, a U.S. solar panel manufacturer just signed a deal to build the world's largest solar farm ever in China.
No.
Arizona-based First Solar, the world's largest solar panel manufacturer, this week announced a tentative deal to build the massive solar project in the vast deserts of northern China as part of that nation's aggressive plans for rapid deployment of renewable energy.
We don't have any deserts here. Is that the problem? No deserts in the U.S.
We'll get to that. The details of the Memorandum of Understanding are yet to be worked out, but the broad agreement calls for First Solar to complete a 25-square-mile project in the Inner Mongolian Desert in phases over the next 10 years, partly subsidized by the Chinese government, with the first 30 megawatts to go online next June. In an interview with the Associated Press, First Solar CEO said the U.S. has plenty of land to launch a similarly massive solar farm, but lack of high-capacity transmission lines combined with competing land interests and state-level bureaucracy makes such a project unlikely anytime soon.
So let me find the glass half full here. At least this is a U.S. manufacturer. There will be jobs, there'll be work, green jobs, and so forth, even if we're not building it here.
They're going to have actually their manufacturing plant in China. No.
The manufacturing plant is in China.
Yes.
So there is no full, not even a half full glass here.
It's great for First Solar, not so great for jobs in the United States.
Great.
Scientists at the University of Michigan have established for the first time a direct link between air pollution and high blood pressure. Although researchers for years had previously linked air pollution with a higher risk of heart disease and stroke, the study for the first time establishes just how that damage occurs. The main factor in increasing blood pressure appears to be from fine particulates, commonly known as soot, in the air from burning fossil fuels, which affects us in two ways. First, the fine particles affect the central nervous system, creating a fight-or-flight response, and then the fine particulates lodge deep in the lungs where they cause inflammation, which over time thickens blood vessels, which is a factor in heart attacks and strokes. The researchers stress that for mostly healthy people, exposure to that air pollution is not dangerous, and they did use levels at the EPA threshold for dangerous air pollution.
Am I insensitive if I suggest a study tying the Green News Report together with high blood pressure? Would that be? Because All right, keep going.
Oil giant BP formerly stood for British Petroleum, but now stands for Beyond Petroleum.
How about blood pressure? Does it stand for blood pressure?
Well, they've doubled down on the petroleum part. They've announced the discovery of what is, they're calling, a giant oil field deep in the Gulf of Mexico, 250 miles southeast of Houston in U.S.-controlled waters. The field is located under 35,000 feet of water. That's deeper than Mount Everest is tall, and deep below the ocean floor, so it would be one of the deepest wells ever drilled.
Now, this is a huge discovery, and actually good news, right, that we found all of this oil?
It's good news for BP. Now, the discovery is unlikely to have any immediate effects on oil prices due to the fact that it will take at least 3 years to begin pumping any oil before BP can determine how much of the oil is economically recovered. Now, according to the New York Times, oil analysts say the price of oil per barrel would need to be about $70 to make that whole effort worthwhile. Now, the price of oil jumped to $72 today after OPEC decided to maintain production levels. And it's out in a hurricane-prone region, platforms that were evacuated during Hurricanes Ike and Gustav over the last 2 years. On the other side of the world, Australia is contending with the flip side of deepwater oil rigs, a massive oil spill off the northwest coast in the Timor Sea, threatening one of the most prolific marine wildlife regions in the world. Located 150 miles off the northwest coast of Australia, a new deepwater oil well popped a drilling cap and has been spilling crude oil since August 21st.
They popped a cap?
Yes, it did. An oil slick 8 miles long has triggered Australia's National Oil Spill Emergency Response System, and government officials have promised a full investigation into the incident. Experts say the well will likely continue spilling for months to come as the oil company attempts to figure out how to cap the wellhead, conduct repairs, and begin the cleanup process. But luckily, the risk of fire is not so much of an issue anymore. Summer may be over, but the astroturfing continues. We've been reporting on all the fake grassroots organizations popping up all over that, upon closer inspection, turn out to be really secretly backed by corporations to advance corporate interests. From the forged advocacy letters sent to members of Congress from the Clean Coal Coalition to the fake grassroots energy citizens rallies and rowdy town halls that were organized and paid for by oil companies that bust in their employees. But the fun's not over yet. Grist.org is reporting on a new nonprofit organization with the creative name PlantsNeedCO2.org, whose mission is to, quote, help prevent the inadvertent negative impact to human, plant, and animal life if we reduce CO2. But no one could have predicted that this 501c3 nonprofit's website is registered to a for-profit oil services company and whose spokesperson is a director of the American Petroleum Institute.
Who'd have thunk it? Good Lord. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Nicely done, Desiree.
Thank you. It was okay.
Yeah, it was excellent. I'm still ticked off, though, I got to say. Why the hell can't we have the largest wind farm in the world here in the U.S.?
Well,
we drive around here, we got nothing but desert out here in the West. What the hell's going on?
Well, obviously, there is a different regulatory scheme at work, and also, you know, the Chinese government, they tell their people what they're going to do. They don't hold back on regulations. They don't have environmental regulations. They don't do environmental reviews. They do try. They are trying to launch a new green movement in China. They're trying to do to be better as far as their environmental responsibility.
Yes, but we have an energy crisis here.
Yes, we do. You know, one of the things that we have is we have, a network of regulatory agencies, government agencies. We got a lot of different people with land interests, not just federal lands, but private lands, and state bureaucracies, because most of this, according at least to the first solar CEO, most of the level of the bureaucracy is at the state level. Our energy policy, he says, is really, truly, honestly decided at the state level, and we don't have a federal top-down plan like China does.
Desi, we've got state forests out there in the middle of the desert. We've got, you know, national forests. We've got these military bases out in, you know, Nevada, where they could put up these solar farms. There's no excuse for this.
Well, one of the things that China has done is they have established a dedicated renewable energy development zone in just one state. Basically, it's a northern state that is completely uninhabited. It's all desert. So they've decided that they're going to make that their place, and they're going to let that place, I guess, not have issues with environmental
issues. Why don't we
issues?
Make it our place? I don't see the environmental problems of putting some mirrors out in the goddamn desert.
I don't think
the
people are calling for it.
I'm calling for it. Bring them on. Desi Doyen, nice job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Get out there and answer the phones. And we're going to be back with Ernest Hancock right after this.
And I'll fly and live down.
Luther.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Coming up in the next hour, the unheard deposition tapes of Sybel Edmonds, former FBI translator, never before heard on the broadcast airwaves because our media doesn't give a damn. Of course, when you hear what she has to say, you will ask yourself, why the hell does our media not care? Why is this not being reported? I know I have been asking that question for the last month. Anyway, hey, folks over at DU, get out there and let folks know this is coming up. Sybel Edmonds going to be on the air the entire hour. Extended clips from her under oath deposition. All right. My next guest here, and you give us a call, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150, or you can stop by the bradblog.com chat room and say hello. It's a rockin' and rollin' conversation going on there. All right, Ernest Hancock joins us now. He is a libertarian activist, a publisher of freedomsphoenix.com. Host of his own radio show on the, which network? Ernie, which network is that on, the radio show? GCN?
Republic Broadcasting Network.
Republic Broadcasting Network. He also ran for Secretary of State in Arizona, as I recall, back in 2006.
And 94.
And in 94. He also designed the Ron Paul Revolution logo, Re-Lovolution logo.
So, Revolution.
There you go. Most famously of late, he brought a handgun to a Barack Obama healthcare meeting out there in Phoenix. We've only got a few minutes before the bottom of the hour, more time after this, so I'll just ask you directly. First, welcome to the show, Ernie.
And thank you.
And where are you?
I'm in Phoenix at home.
What, you got a train coming through your apartment?
Oh, man, I'm sorry, you hearing that?
Yeah,
I got under my desk for my 25th wedding anniversary. My wife got me a foot massager.
Well, turn off your foot massager, Ernie.
I didn't know you could hear it.
Jeez, what the hell? All right, Ernie.
I want to tell you, Brad, I'm so glad to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, you're such a good guy to have out there. We put a lot of your stuff up on Freedom's Phoenix.
Don't be buttering me up, Hancock, because I'm going to...
Before you make me mad, man.
Okay, all right. All right, well, I should say I've known Ernest for a while, and you do, in fact, link over quite frequently to bradblog.com. We've had a lot in common. You've been a hell of a good fighter against election fraud out there in Arizona. So we'll have more time after the break. I give you this very quick question for the moment, Ernie. You brought a gun to Barack Obama's town hall meeting. You were there with Chris B, I think. I don't know. Do we know his last name? You know his last name. Is that public?
I do now.
Okay.
But yeah.
He brought an assault rifle to this meeting. So I will ask you, what the hell were you thinking, Ernest?
Well, my thing, you go to, I put up on freedomsphoenix.com a bunch of links and so on for your audience. They can go and just look so I don't have to go on, and they have all the information there. But what happened was when that gentleman William Kostrick, brought the firearm in New Hampshire, I started hearing the same rhetoric back from 13 years ago by the same people. Rahm Emanuel was senior advisor to Clinton from 93 to 98. Janet Napolitano, now head of Homeland Security, was the prosecutor on a militia case here in Arizona that they just amped up into a whole bunch of falsehoods. We knew some of the people in there. One guy was a good friend of mine, and we knew it was a bunch of lies. And in fact, that started coming out, but too late. And he did 5.5 years. When Kostrick brought the gun, they were saying the same thing because he happened to be from Scottsdale, Arizona. So the same rhetoric was coming up. The Thursday before Obama came on that Monday, I called the Phoenix Police Department. They
hold the thought with the Phoenix Police Department, and I'll just say it was a different. It is the same people, but it's a different time, in my opinion.
No, it's not.
We're gonna talk about that after the break. Ernest Hancock, libertarian and gun-toting Arizona guy. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Program. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. Mike and Kathy will return next week. Never fear. They'll be here on Monday. Until then, you got me. Deal with it. We're speaking with Ernest Hancock, who brought a gun to the recent late August town hall, healthcare town hall, where Barack Obama was speaking. He was there to interview, not to interview, but he did interview a fellow by the name of Chris B., who brought an assault rifle to the Barack Obama healthcare event in Phoenix. And, of course, I've known Ernest, and I've known him, frankly, to be a good guy. He's fought right by my side for a long time on the fight for election integrity out there in Arizona and other constitutional issues. Took on the Bush administration, called them out for being as corrupt as they were. And now he's bringing guns to Barack Obama events. And I got to say, Ernie, what the hell are you thinking? You said you spoke with the Phoenix police before you went out there, and that's where I cut you off. So let's finish that story, and we'll get on to some other questions here. Uh-oh. There we go.
Knowing me, the first thing is you know that I probably had a reason.
Well, of course
and
you did.
The reason was is that I went through this before. 13 years ago, they amped up during all the militia craze and the days of and stuff. There was a lot of long story as to why I believe the administration and so on was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going after this one pastor that keeps sticking his foot in his mouth, and that's his problem.
That's not sticking his foot in his mouth, Ernest. He's out there saying that he hopes Barack Obama dies, that somebody kills him.
I understand. You can't, you know, hate and be part of the Lovolution.
Well,
I'm with you, brother.
That's right. And you designed the Ron Paul Lovolution logo. So let's just be clear.
But
the guys.
But the point is that you have a guy that has 36 parishioners, and they will make him the center of the universe. They will use him as a poster child for something.
Because Ernest.
No. I understand. I'm with you. But I want you to understand the distraction that's being done here. When I called the Phoenix police, I had worked with these guys before when this happened last time, and they amped up all kinds of stuff like this. Because you can always find the guy that wears the floppy camo hat with one tooth that, you know, let's go get him kind of stuff. That's where the cameras always go.
All right, Ernie, this guy, this preacher who called for Obama to die, apparently Chris B. went to his church,
and
Chris B. is someone who you know. I don't know if he's a friend of yours or not, but you know him because you guys organized to do your radio show and interview him from the Obama event where he had an assault rifle and you had a handgun. Now,
right. Now, let me go and tell you what happened. I'll walk you through it, man.
Well, you got to do it quick because I want to get to a lot of stuff here. So,
hey, this is what's going on. I talked to the Phoenix Police Department. I said, man, we got to get together on it because I see this coming again. We went through this before over a decade ago. They're going to amp up charges. They're going to come to Arizona. They got the link with Kostrick from New Hampshire, having been from Scottsdale. And they go, yeah, you're right. We need to talk. They came the next day. It was then when I talked to them that I even knew Obama was coming. I didn't even know he was coming. So I go, all right, what we're going to do is we're going to try and preempt all this stuff. We're going to, because there's other guys that are already going to be coming with firearms on the gun blogs are coming and so on. I'm going to try and keep this peaceful. I will come with my sidearm, do my show live, and you'll be there to protect my rights to do so. Keep everybody calm. They go, cool, not a problem. Love it. Love to help you out. So then I get a call that weekend from Chris saying, hey, I want to bring my AR-15. And I'm like, I'm not going to tell him, no, it's legal, and he wants to do that, fine, you know, but you're on your own. So he came down, I interviewed him, and this is what happened. The thing was that was interesting was his message. His message, Chris's, was if you keep pushing my generation long enough and plundering us and taking away our future, sooner or later there will be resistance. This was the modern equivalent of pitchforks and torches.
Okay, so let me jump in here. You have every right to bring that gun if you want. Because you have the right doesn't mean it is right. And if you think these times are the same as they were back in the 90s with Bill Clinton, when you've got an African-American president in there who already has a target
nobody
on his head.
Nobody cares about that. You guys just keep making that like that's something. No, people want their freedom back. They don't care who's taking it or giving it to them.
All right,
they just want their freedom
Ernie,
back.
Ernie, do you believe Barack Obama wants to take your gun away?
You know, I don't care. He's so way down on the list.
Answer me that question. Do you believe Barack Obama wants to take your gun away?
I don't think he'd be very upset if it was taken from him.
Do you think Barack Obama wants to take your gun away.
I don't know. I haven't even checked.
Okay.
Haven't looked. Don't care.
Well, because the right-wing nutbags out there have been, you know, having runs on guns and ammo since Obama is in there. It seems to me that's the last damn thing Barack Obama is worried about. And here's where I'm going to call you out for not calling out this preacher who called for, to kill Barack Obama, to give him an excuse, as you did just a few minutes ago, saying, oh, he put his foot in his mouth. That's not his foot in his mouth. These right-wing teabaggers, Ernie, have co-opted your legitimate movement, the Ron Paul movement, that, you know, all of a sudden, these people are concerned about the Constitution and about the deficit. You have been concerned about the deficit and the Constitution for years. So when you show up and you throw in with these right-wing nutball teabaggers, they are taking the Ron Paul revolution that you guys legitimately ran back when they treated you like freaks. And if you don't separate yourself from them and from these, you know, preachers calling for these for the death of Obama, you know, I think you're giving up a lot of the legitimate ground that you earned over the last 8 years.
Brad, you're playing right into their hands, man. It's this bipolar back and forth thing. What makes you think that we have anything to do with them? You know, when we go, we take thousands of DVDs of various different things like America Freedom to Fascism and so on. We spray that out for the entire crowd. The right, the Clear Channel guys, they were the most upset. One of the shows that you'll see I put up on the posting for your listeners is Clear Channel had me on their morning show angry with me because we distracted from their corner when they're yelling at the other the Obama guys that come in by the busload to be violent. They're there shipped in.
Well, that's right. And you need to, and these are why the times are different, Ernie. These are, you need to separate yourself. You say, oh, we weren't the same as them. Well, guess what? Hang on.
This Tea Party stuff was a libertarian thing that has been going back for decades, and then these Clear Channel Republican guys, they come in, and then they take it, and we're like, fine, thanks for getting us a crowd of your guys so we can get DVDs.
So why the hell... Listen, I'm sitting out here. I'm not in Phoenix. I'm watching the news. I'm watching Talking Points Memo. I'm watching CNN.
Hey,
and there is
memo.
No...
Hang on. The truth.
Hang on. Hang on, Ernie. There is no separation when this is reported to the media. You may think you're on a different side of the sidewalk from the nutball teabaggers, but it doesn't go out that way. It looks like you are one of them, and if you're not going to call them out for what they are, if you're not going to say to those jerks, hey, where the hell were you people for the last 8 years when we were out here saying, what about these deficits? What about, you know, George Bush on his tax cut spending twice as much as the health care would even cost? I know you're probably against both of them, but you spoke out. And
well, obviously, you're not reading enough of Freedom's Phoenix. We do that every day.
I know you call out these nutbags.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Constantly.
So you have this.
All
right. So you have this opportunity where you know the national media is going to be there, CNN is going to be there, and the way you use that opportunity to get your message out to the national media is to show up with a frickin' gun?
Absolutely,
Ernie?
For two reasons. One, Phoenix Police Department protect our rights, and we are not going to sit and let you guys do again as a distraction. It's all about money.
Who you, you guys who? Who are you talking about, you guys?
Oh, the administration, the left and right paradigm of the we rule the planet people.
Okay, I'm not the administration, so don't say you guys to me. Secondly...
No, I don't mean you.
All right, and secondly...
Know, my thing, Brad, we're on the same side on this. We just have different methods. And the thing that people are so concerned about, they're going, wow, they're bringing guns to these protests. I go, that already started. It's increasing. It was going to happen without me. I worked with the Phoenix Police Department to keep it peaceful so nobody got hurt. And I'm going, look, there is not going to be a repeat of what you guys did with the Viper Militia back in the late 90s. And I left that information for your listeners also.
Right.
They're going to do it again, and I wanted to prevent it. I already know it. It's not the same kind of people. It was the same people. They are are always dividing us. They're always making it to where they don't want you and I to be friends.
You're playing earnest, Ernie. You're playing into their hands. When you show up, there is no difference between you and the crazy,
the crazy right wing. What the media says, they're going to say what they always say. That's why we have Freedom's Phoenix.
You guys.
It's important to have Brad's blog. Don't let them decide what is and isn't the truth. I ignore them.
I don't. And we're speaking with Ernest Hancock, libertarian activist, publisher of freedomsphoenix.com. You can give us a call, 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. I'm saying, Ernest, that you have legitimate concerns about your constitutional rights. Okay? You're not a pretender in my mind. These other guys, they are pretenders.
And
They are AstroTurf, but they're...
Besides AstroTurf, this is, you have, you know, the unions and money for the big guys, they use their power. You have the direct feed they have to the big business on the right side, and at the end of this thing, this is the rhetoric that I'm making sure is getting out. At the end of this healthcare debate, I guarantee you there will be a new bucket of money. It'll have Republicans saying, oh, we got a good compromise, and it's our bucket of money. And Democrats, well, we got our bucket of money. But in the end, I guarantee there's going to be a new line on your paycheck. It's going to be Mrs. Fika, and she likes to shop. Mm-hmm. It is all a bank robbery. This has nothing to do. They don't give a crap about your health. It's just another bucket of money.
Yeah, but you see, you're allowing yourself to be put in and to be ignored and to be marginalized like the...
It's not about me, Brad. I don't care about me.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the things that you believe in. And this is what they did to you in 2008, to the Ron Paul...
They always do it. They're always going to do it. And how many minds can we free? How many people can we expose to the information? How much can we damage their credibility? That's what we do. That's what I'm doing on your show right now. That's why I love coming on here. I was on Air America for 2 years here. You know, the libertarian message has been exposed to the left here in Phoenix. You know that. These people understand they've been lied to. We have such a coalition at Freedom's Phoenix. We have a 3,600 square foot workshop, video studio, radio studio, sign production, t-shirt, printing. We are rocking and rolling. And right now for 9/11, I have the anti-war movement, the left, the right, all the people down there, the revolution. They are all working together because we know what the real problem is.
It may be a tyrannical government, but I think you've allowed yourself to be co-opted by nuts. When they come out and they say
co-opted.
It's a
How'd they co-opt me, Brad?
Because when they come out and they say this is a tyrannical government, we know they're lying because they didn't give a damn when it became a tyrannical government like never before over these past 8 years. So you will be as easily ignored as them, and that's a shame because those of us who believe in the Constitution, who believe in standing up for rights, could use folks like you and folks like the Ron Paul people who were marginalized by the same folks that you're sharing a sidewalk with holding a gun. Hold that thought, Ernest. We will come back. I'll let you respond. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy program, talking to my friend, Ernest Hancock of freedomsphoenix.com. We'll be back right after this. Don't let me down. You're listening to the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman in for Malloy, speaking with Ernie Hancock, the libertarian activist, publisher of freedomsphoenix.com. He hosts his own radio show on the Republic Network. He ran for Secretary of State in 06 and 94. 94, right?
This thing's been screwed up for a long time.
Well, and he's been raising hell over the past couple of years about concerns about Republicans and Democrats alike big on the election integrity movement, fighting for paper ballots out there in Arizona. He designed the Ron Paul Re-Levolution logo. I find Ernie to be a good guy, and it's mystifying to me that he thinks it's a smart idea to bring a gun to a Barack Obama healthcare event out there in Phoenix, as he did a couple of weeks ago.
I want to ask you this real quick.
Okay.
What made it a healthcare event? That was the one thing the Republicans kept hammering on me about. They're going, well, you changed the debate from the healthcare. It was supposed to be healthcare. And I'm going, why didn't you get that memo? I mean, who's talking to the VFW about military stuff? Who decided that this was a healthcare protest?
Fair enough. My mistake. I thought it was a healthcare town hall, but it wasn't. It was just a VFW town hall.
Yeah, no.
Fair enough. My mistake.
Like, you know, the left and the right, okay. You know, they keep trying to couch it in that. They get the memo, and they say, oh, this is what it is. And I'm going, well, who said that?
Okay.
I wonder where this is. You're falling into it. You
okay.
Know?
Well, no.
Program, man.
You're right. You're right. I stand corrected. Now, why do you think that of all the things that you can demonstrate about, that you need to demonstrate about, it's the gun thing? Or is that the way you get national attention? You probably wouldn't be on the Mike Malloy Show right now, I suspect, had you not brought a gun.
Oh, if I wanted to, I'd think of something.
You come up with something.
The thing is that it wasn't about the guns. It was about preventing this next administration from doing the exact same thing that they did 13 years ago and they're doing now with the same people
and the
same rhetoric.
And you think the best way to get attention to that is to bring assault rifles to
Obama? Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, not assault rifle.
Okay.
I didn't care about that. But, you know, absolutely. I did this intentionally with the cooperation of the Phoenix Police Department because they had the same concerns I did. They went through this too.
Okay. Now we've got a couple of questions that are coming in from the chat room. First, how do you feel, Ernie, about Bush taking guns away from folks in New Orleans during Katrina?
Atrocious. When they needed them the most.
And yet, where were
they?
We
hammered on them big time on that.
Well, how about the teabaggers? Were they hammering on Bush for that?
Oh, heck no. They're part of the machine on the other side of the same coin. You go high enough on this pyramid, you'll find the same people control both sides. I saw it at the, this is a good one. Cindy Sheehan doesn't get enough props. I mean, she's been out there, definitely against this war. I was in Crawford, Texas, set with the fire ants for a week, covering her for the Air America affiliate here in Phoenix. And I'm telling you, I saw what MoveOn did. They wanted to make her, right when she's at the peak of her attention, they wanted her to agree that she would support a phased withdrawal, not this immediate just get out. And she wouldn't do it, and then the left and the Democrats, they just abandoned her, you're not one of us. And I sat there and watched it happen, and it is because the same thing, if you get high enough on this pyramid, it's the same people in charge. And the people haven't figured that out yet. If they think voting's going to make them free, they haven't been paying attention.
I don't disagree with really any of your points. I just disagree with your tactics. Give me in 30 seconds, give me here, well, because we're running up against the clock, what freedoms do you feel that we've lost, and how have you, someone, Rostamon, in the chat room wants to know how you have personally suffered from the stimulus spending?
Okay, took my money to begin with. I just had my first grandchild. It's not her debt. You know, they're going to enslave this next generation to as much as they possibly can without limit, and they don't even get to have a say. So this is, you go to itsnotmydebt.com, you'll see the billboards we put up all around Phoenix. Itsnotmydebt.com is the next generation that don't get to say no. That's where I'm putting my focus of my time. You know, fine, you're bad, you did, you whatever. You can't guarantee an entire stripping of the future of a whole other generation, and they don't even get to have a say.
I hear you, but
the anti-war movement.
And I gotta get out, Ernie. But I say,
anti-war movement, where is it?
If you call out, what's that?
Anti-war movement, where is it?
I agree. And if you call out the anti-war movement, great. But you got to call out these wingnuts at the same time, because they treated you
every
guys,
day.
Ron Paul, like crap for the last 8 years.
Every day, Brad, every day.
Thank you, brother. Ernest Hancock of FreedomsPhoenix.com. Thanks for joining us. Sabelle Edmonds and her remarkable deposition. Never heard on air before, coming up next. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Program. Brad Friedman in for Mike for the fastest 3 hours in radio. Wow. A couple of great hours there, and what you are about to hear, I think, will amaze you. What will amaze you is not just the content of what you're about to hear, but the fact that you're hearing it here perhaps for the first time, that this has not been picked up on any corporate media, despite the fact that the story of Sybil Edmonds, the FBI translator, the former FBI translator turned whistleblower, was initially told years ago on 60 Minutes, picked it up back when Sybil could not speak because she was gagged by the Bush administration under the state secrets privilege, the so-called draconian state secrets privilege. They gagged her twice. With that, the ACLU called her the most gagged woman in the history of the United States. And back then, 60 Minutes reported on it. In 2005, Vanity Fair reported on it. I think it was like a 5,000-word expose. Now, she was called recently to testify in a case in Ohio between Mean Gene Schmidt, Representative Schmidt, and her opponent, David Krikorian, because Schmidt is claiming false statements made by Krikorian, who claimed that she accepted blood money from Turkish agents in this fight over the Armenian genocide. It goes back 100 years, but it's still a hugely contentious topic in Congress. Well, the Obama administration did not invoke the state secrets privilege and allowed Sybil Edmonds to speak. It was a 3 or 4 hour deposition. You're about to hear selections, extended selections from that deposition for the first time. We released the entire deposition, transcript and videotape at bradblog.com, excuse me, about 2 weeks ago. At least 2 weeks ago, not a single mainstream media outlet has picked it up, despite the allegations she makes. In this case, we're going to hear about allegations against current and former Congress members who you are familiar with. You will recognize these folks. Please note that Sybil is careful to not violate her non-disclosure agreements with the FBI, so she has to speak around a few different things. And this is a full 6-minute clip. We're going to have more ahead. But you need to hear this because she's talking about bribery and blackmail of current and former members of Congress. Never heard before on the air. Her under oath deposition from August 8, 2008. Tony?
Now, on that website, on this state secrets privileged gallery, it seems like you have photographs of various individuals.
Yes.
Is Dan Burton one of the people who's in the gallery?
His pictures is there, yes.
Okay. Why is his picture there?
Those pictures, his and others, are there because state secrets privilege was mainly invoked to cover up those individuals' illegal, extremely illegal activities against the United States citizens who were involved in operations that were against border foreign governments and foreign entities against the United States interests.
Dan Burton is the representative member of Congress from Indiana.
I believe he is.
Okay. It also appears that you have a photograph of Dennis Hastert in the gallery.
Yes.
Okay. And why is his photograph there?
He would be one of the primary U.S. persons involved in operations and activities that are not legal, not for the interests of the United States, but for the interests of foreign governments and foreign entities.
Okay. Now, and again, Mr. Hastert was the Speaker of the House, representative from Illinois?
At the time, he was.
Can you tell me anything about what your concerns are about Mr. Hastert?
The concerns, again, would be several categories. Acceptance of large sums of bribery in forms of cash or laundered cash and laundering it to make it look legal for his campaigns and also for his personal use in order to do certain favors and call for certain actions and make certain things happen for foreign entities and foreign governments' interests, Turkish government's interests and Turkish business entity's interests.
Did you have reason to believe that Mr. Hastert, for example, killed one of the Armenian genocide resolutions in exchange for money from these Turkish organizations?
Yes, I did.
Are you aware of other members of Congress other than Mr. Hastert taking money from Turkish organizations in exchange for denying the Armenian genocide?
Yes, and not only taking money, but other activities too, including being blackmailed for various reasons.
Stephen Sowars is on your in your gallery as well. I believe he's a representative from New York. Is that correct?
He used to be.
Was.
Correct. He is a registered lobbyist for the or was a registered lobbyist for the government of Turkey.
Mr. Hastert is also a registered lobbyist for the government of Turkey now.
That's what I have read, and it was announced. Yes, he is.
And why is Mr. Sowars in your gallery?
Mr. Sowars and certain others in the gallery, as lobbyists, they also acted as conduits to deliver or launder contribution and other briberies to certain members of Congress, but also in pressuring outside Congress, and including blackmail in certain members of Congress.
And Mr. Sowars and others would be doing this on behalf of these Turkish organizations?
And the Turkish government, correct, both.
Would you say that, would it be your opinion that the Turkish government, through these Turkish organizations in the United States and otherwise, has corrupted members of Congress?
Absolutely, yes.
And is that based on you just speculating, or is it based on something else?
Based on documented and provable facts and files and based on facts 100% and documented facts.
It looks like you have a photo of Bob Livingston on your gallery as well.
Yes.
And I believe he's a congressman from, Louisiana at some point?
Correct.
He was the one that was going to be the speaker but then left.
Yes. Yeah.
Why is he in your gallery?
Until 1999, until he left, for activities that he was engaged, not very legal activities, on behalf of foreign interests and entities. And after 1999, acting as a conduit to, again, further foreign interests, both overtly and covertly as a lobbyist, but also as an operative.
When you say as an operative, what do you mean by that?
In order to explain, I will give you an example, maybe. Is that okay?
Sure.
Just a hypothetical example?
It's okay with me.
Yeah. Okay. If an individual has a company set up and clients in offshore islands like Cayman Islands, for example, and is able to, as an operative, to launder money by foreign entities that were obtained illegally, and some of them had to do with narcotics, and use these Cayman Islands offshore accounts to do that, and then some of that money goes to the congressional people, I would call that not overt, I would call that covert operations, covert operative operations for that person, but rather than the classic lobbying operation.
One of the other entries on your Wikipedia entry indicates that the entry says Edmonds also accuses Dennis Hastert of taking bribes.
Yes.
And then it says, and high-ranking members of the U.S. government sold nuclear secrets to Turkey and Pakistan. Did you allege that high-ranking members of the U.S. government have sold nuclear secrets to Turkey and Pakistan?
That they were involved in operations that were obtaining illegally U.S. weapons and nuclear-related technology and sell it to foreign governments and also foreign independent operatives.
All right, what you're hearing there is Sybil Edmonds in an under oath deposition. She is a former FBI translator. Her information comes, what she did while she was working there was a listen to wiretaps of criminal investigations that were going on. She is speaking of Dan Burton, Republican from Indiana, still serves in the House, Denny Hastert. And she speaks about some $500,000 in bribes and blackmail that the Speaker of the House, then Speaker of the House, received from Turkish agents. Pretty serious allegations. Stephen Sowars, also from a Democrat from New York, Bob Livingston, Republican from Louisiana, saying essentially that he helped to launder money offshore. I want to apologize, by the way, for the sound quality there from that deposition. That was a videotape of a deposition. Sybelle Edmonds speaking for the first time after being gagged by the Bush administration, who said that what she had to say was so important to national security that she must be kept quiet. I should point out that the DOJ's Inspector General report on her allegations called them credible, serious, and warranting a thorough and careful review by the FBI. Senator Grassley and Leahy wrote letters on her behalf. And told 60 Minutes, Grassley did, that absolutely she's credible, and the reason I feel she's very credible is because people within the FBI have corroborated a lot of her story. She has more remarkable allegations ahead, more Congress folks, more on nuclear secrets being sold, as our U.S. Congress members have been watching, and more operatives in the U.S. Congress, including one woman who she says was videotaped in a lesbian affair. All of that and more straight ahead.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small.
Take a tip, button up your lip. Don't get yourself unstrung.
Harm may come
just from a slip of the tongue.
Don't talk about the weather.
It's a military secret.
All right.
Just keep it.
Welcome back
together
to the Mike Malloy program.
That's the safest way to keep it.
Brad Friedman in for Malloy. My thanks to Christine Blasdale for the suggestion of that song, Military Secrets. We are listening to the never heard on the air before extended excerpts from former FBI translator Sybelle Edmonds' recent deposition in Ohio in the Schmidt versus Krikorian case. She had been gagged for, what are we talking about now? Oh, about 5 years. She was hired by the FBI to be a translator to listen to wiretaps after 2001, after 9/11 2001. Actually, she was hired on September 15th of 2001, as I recall. And in that last clip, and I think we're going to have to wait for the next break, actually, Tony, to play this, because it's also another long clip where she talks about more members of Congress who she alleges were bribed, were blackmailed, were hooked, if you will, by Turkish agents and others into doing all sorts of things, amongst them allowing our nuclear secrets to be sold, to be taken from military installations and sold into the black market. Her story has been picked up not by the U.S. media of late, but the Sunday Times of London, who broke some of her story a year or two ago when she had been over at the Brad blog and announced that she would now tell her story to anyone, that she was ready to defy her state secrets gag that had been placed on her twice by John Ashcroft and the Bush administration, because presumably her information was so explosive that it couldn't be discussed publicly in any way. She is now doing so, and yet the yawn from the corporate media, and you're right, I am the mainstream media, as I believe Tim points out to me in the Brad blog chat room, the corporate media apparently doesn't give a damn. Dennis Hastert, Speaker of the House, taking $500,000 at least in bribes from Turkish interests. An FBI, former FBI translator making these claims. Translator that has been called by the Department of Justice IG, Glenn Fine, credible, serious, warranting a thorough and careful review by the FBI. Senators Grassley and Leahy wrote letters on her behalf to the DOJ. Absolutely, she's credible. Chuck Grassley told 60 Minutes. And yet, these allegations of current and former Congress members taking bribes, being infiltrated by the Turkish government, selling our nuclear secrets. Yeah, I realize it sounds like a spy novel. It sounds like a Tom Clancy novel or something. And maybe it is. And maybe her allegations don't hold up. But they seem newsworthy, do they not? At least as newsworthy as this jackass from South Carolina yelling out lie at a presidential speech. I'd love to see them debunked. But if they're not reported, if they're not investigated, now we do have other FBI folks who have stood behind Sibel. She founded the National Security Whistleblower Center. They have said Sibel is credible as well, that these are serious allegations. We're talking about folks, Republicans, Democrats, independents alike. I think they're notable, and that's why I'm playing extended clips on the air. And there's a lot more that she talks about. You can see the entire videotape for yourself and, you know, decide if she's credible. We got it all over at bradblog.com. We're pulling out just some of the sections here where she talks about congressional corruption, but she also talks about State and Defense Department officials, high ranking. We're talking folks like Richard Perle, Douglas Feith, Paul Wolfowitz, Mark Grossman. He was the third highest official at the State Department in the Bush State Department. She says that he tipped off Turkish agents to Valerie Plame's Brewster Jennings as far back as 2001. These are some extraordinary allegations, and if they're not legitimate, fine. Let's see the evidence that they're not. But the media needs to do its job. They're not willing to do the job. I am willing to be the media. More from the Sibel Edmonds deposition. About a current sitting Democratic congresswoman being blackmailed and another Republican being blackmailed. Straight ahead after this. On the run. Destiny is a rising sun. Burning down the house, indeed. We're listening to the Sibel Edmonds sworn deposition that she gave August 8th, 2009, just over one month ago. We released the deposition in full 2 weeks ago. She's a former FBI translator who was hired after 9/11 to listen to wiretaps in the counterintelligence division of the FBI going back to as far back as 96. She has already named, she was gagged by the Bush administration under the state secrets privilege twice, such that the ACLU, who helped her bring her case all the way to the Supreme Court, called her the most gagged woman in the history of America. She has already talked about bribery and blackmail of Congress members such as Dan Burton from Indiana, still in Congress, Denny Hastert, former Speaker, Stephen Solars, Bob Livingston, and the sale of nuclear weapons to Turkey and Pakistan as these folks watched and maybe received hundreds of thousands of dollars. In this clip coming up here, she speaks more about the more Congress members. She names more names, including one who she doesn't name, a congresswoman, a Democrat. She doesn't say she's a Democrat here, but I've confirmed it with her later, who was apparently quote-unquote hooked into a sexual affair and videotaped, a lesbian affair and videotaped. We apologize for the sound quality here of these clips, but it's important to get them out. And that's what we're trying to do, because in the 2 weeks since I've released them at bradblog.com, not a single mainstream corporate media outlet has covered this. By the way, Mike Malloy has, and he had me on to talk about these allegations. But only now are we hearing these tapes for the first time on the broadcast airwaves. So let's go into this second clip here. Tony, she speaks again about this state secrets privilege gallery, these pictures she put on her website when she couldn't name names, but she did put up some photographs, and now she's naming names.
We've talked about some members of Congress having connections with the Turkish government or Turkish organizations. Are there others that you're aware of, other than the ones we've discussed?
Congressional members?
Congressional members?
Yes.
Can you identify some of them?
Their pictures are on the... I have pictures included on my website,
okay.
And they can be identified. There are several there, outside the ones you named. Others have been identified. They're all identified as public information.
Yeah.
Okay. Tom Lantis is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he passed away. And Tom Lantis' office would be not only with the bribe, but also in disclosing highest level protected U.S. intelligence and weapons technology information, both to Israel and to Turkey. His office was also involved with that. It was not only bribery, but it was other very serious criminal conduct. Roy Blunt is there. There's an individual with a question mark there. The reason it's a question mark is I was terminated by April 2002, but this particular congresswoman, these Turkish organizations and operatives, if they can't do it via money, they do via blackmail. So they collect information on sexual lives and other information like that.
Mm-hmm.
And with this particular congresswoman, between 2000 and until I left, this congresswoman is married to children, grown children, but she is bisexual. So they had sent Turkish female agents, and that Turkish female agent worked for Turkish government, and had sexual relationship with this congresswoman in her townhouse, actually in this area. And the entire episodes of their sexual conduct was being filmed because the entire house, this congressional woman's house, was bugged. And so they had all that documented to be used for certain things that they wanted to request, but I left, so I don't know whether that congresswoman complied and gave. That's why I couldn't use her name, because her face, because I don't know if she did anything illegal afterwards, but she was, their things, information was being collected for blackmail purposes and her lesbian relationship, and the Turkish entities wanted both congressional related favoritism from her, but also her husband was in a high position in the area in the state she was elected from, and the Turkish entities ran certain illegal operations and they wanted her husband's help. But I don't know if she provided them with those. I left, I was terminated.
Can you tell me how you know all that? Everything you just told me?
I can't discuss the intelligence gathering method by the FBI, but in general terms, when foreign targets among themselves discuss how they were going to achieve certain goals, objectives, and if that those communications are collected and recorded, not only communications, but in some cases, the involved field office can send surveillance team to see that actually they implemented. For example, if they say that somebody says at 5 o'clock they're going to bug this house, the surveillance team would go out and see that, yeah, in fact, these people broke it. And so there were various ways that things were collected.
Right. So just to make sure I understand this, Turkish entities were at least preparing to blackmail this congresswoman?
Correct.
And is this congresswoman still a sitting member of Congress?
Yes.
And why, if you know, they want to blackmail this congresswoman?
I don't know what reasons they had. Why they just didn't do money. They needed... I was trained as a language specialist by my agent to find pertinent information. And one of the things that we were taught in the FBI, everyone was taught in the counterintelligence, that the target U.S. persons, whether they are in Congress or executive branch or wherever, first go by foreign entities through what they refer to as hooking theory. And it was very common. It's a very common way of trying to find vulnerabilities, and that is sexual, financial, any other kinds of greed. And it was done a lot. It was being done a lot. And in some cases, certain people from Pentagon would send a list of individual with access to sensitive data, whether weapons technology or nuclear technology. And this information would include all their sexual preference, how much they owed on their home, if they have gambling issues. And the State Department, high-level State Department person, would provide it to these foreign operatives. And those foreign operatives then would go and hook those Pentagon people, whether they were at RAND or some other Air Force base. And then the hooking period would take sometimes 6 months, sometimes 1 year. They would ask for a small favor. But eventually, after they would do the targets, the U.S. person, some small favor, then they would go blackmail, and then that person would give them everything. Nuclear-related information, weapons-related information, it always worked for them. So it was not always money.
It was not only money. It was not always money. That was Sybil Edmonds in her sworn deposition, the former FBI translator, heard for the first time on the airwaves here. She has named, as far as folks taking bribes and being blackmailed, Dan Burton, Republican of Indiana, Dennis Hastert, Republican of Illinois, Stephen Solars, Democrat of New York, Bob Livingston, Republican of Louisiana, Tom Lantos, now in this last segment, Tom Lantos, Democrat from California, who's now deceased. She talks about weapons sales to Turkey and Israel. Weapons technology sold to Turkey and Pakistan. Also, she mentions Roy Blunt. I think she speaks about Roy Blunt a little bit more in this next clip. It's a little shorter. And the unnamed Congresswoman, Democrat, who she does not name because she does not know if, in fact, she was ultimately blackmailed or did anything criminally, because before she left the FBI in 2002, and she doesn't know the end of that story, so she did not name her name. The other ones she named, she does allege they, in fact, are bribed or blackmailed and performed criminal acts that are treasonous against this country. But this woman, she doesn't know, this married congresswoman who was quote-unquote hooked into having a sexual affair, a lesbian affair, with a Turkish agent, and the entire episode was filmed, videotaped. We're going to play, I think we got time for one more clip here before we have to get to a break. Let's go to... Where are we here? Clip three. All right, clip three. Sybil Edmonds discusses more about the hooking techniques that are used, more details on Dennis Hastert and his activities, more details on Roy Blunt, a bit of how these folks use these PACs to distribute money to Congress members and other high officials.
In your experience, I mean, was this hooking technique used with other members of Congress by Turkish entities?
When I worked for the FBI, I worked on operations that were not only current, but a specific period of 1996 to 2001 December, 2002 January. So there were a lot of things that a search and field office had provided me to go over, and some of that I didn't complete. But one example would be with regard to Mr. Hastert. For example, he used a townhouse that was not his residence, and for certain not very morally accepted activities. Now, whether that was being used as blackmail, I don't know. But the fact that foreign entities knew about this, in fact, they sometimes participated in some of those not maybe morally well activities in that particular townhouse that was supposed to be an office, not a house, residence, at certain hours, certain days, evenings of the week. So I can't say if that was used as blackmail or not, but certain activities, they were shared, they were known.
Why is Roy Blunt on your gallery?
Be one of the individuals who was the recipient of both legally and illegally raised donations, campaign donations from foreign entities.
And what foreign entities?
The ones that I'm aware of, Turkish entities. Yeah. It's just like a network, because those people, they work together. And I don't have expertise in PAC, but I, a lot of, there are so many ways that these PAC things can be not very legally distributed from one person's, let's say, Mr. Hester's campaign to that individual, or let's say if it's a foreign registered lobbyist like Livingston can get foreign money but then clean it and then give it through him. It's just so many ways. It's a very complicated maze-like network and how they get these this money cleared and into people, into people's pocket and also their campaign.
Are you, is it come to your attention that some members of Congress, once they've left Congress, like Dennis Hastert, engage in lobbying for the Turkish government?
Dennis Hastert is known publicly. Stephen Solars is known publicly. He used to be a congressman, and then he became lobbyist as soon as he left, both for Israel and Turkey. Bob Livingston, he, within a year after he left Congress, he became the paid lobbyist for the government of Turkey, and he's registered under FARA, Foreign Agents Registration Act. But then there are people who work for these lobbying firms who are not the top, but they have received their share while they were working, whether they are in Pentagon. One person was Defense Intelligence Agency person, Dana Bauer, and now she works for Bob Livingston. But this individual, Ms. Bauer, did a lot of favors and illegal favors to for government of Turkey and others, and then was hired by Livingston and put on a big salary to represent Turkish government. So it's not only top tier, the lobbying firm, but even the people who work for them later and the various layers of those people.
Okay. So she talked about Denny Hastert, not very morally accepted activities. Roy Blunt, who is a congressman from Missouri, Republican, who's now running for Senate. I believe he's going to be running for Senate for the state of Missouri, being involved in this as well. By the way, Dennis Hastert, now that he's out of Congress, is working for a lobbyist on behalf of the Turkish government, making $35,000 a month. Brad Friedman, in for Malloy. You're listening to the Sybil Edmonds Depositions. One more break, a little bit more Sybil, and we'll be back. Petrified. We're going to stare down the bad guys, and that's what we're doing here. If you are as amazed as I have been by these disclosures from former FBI translator Sybil Edmonds, I hope you will share this hour far and wide and point folks towards the deposition. You can read the transcript in full. You can see the video in full. There's about 3 or 4 hours of it over at bradblog.com. I've been trying to get it out, so I'm just playing it on the radio at this point. We're only focusing on the allegations about Congress members. Believe me, there is a lot more in her allegations. Where the hell is the corporate mainstream media out there? You got me. No idea why they're not covering this, investigating this, even debunking it, if that's necessary. I did hear from Sybil this morning that there may be another article coming out in a major newspaper next week. I suspect it won't be a U.S. paper. I'm going to play one more short clip here. 1 minute from the deposition of Sybil Edmonds, FBI translator, talking about the allegations she's made about all of these Congress members. Tony?
So if I were to say that if I were a congressperson and I'm taking money from the Turkish government, either directly or indirectly, would it be a fair statement that I'm taking money from a government that has engaged in policies and practices that have cost American lives?
Correct.
The people you've identified, the people that you've talked about today, you're certain about?
Yes.
What you've told me today about those people is not based on speculation?
No.
Any doubt in your mind that the Turkish government has cost American lives?
No.
Caused the loss of American lives?
No. And not only American lives, so even in other countries and some innocent American lives too, yes.
Any question in your mind, based on everything that you've experienced, that the Turkish government has infiltrated members of Congress to get their support against or their opposition to the Armenian genocide resolution?
None whatsoever.
None whatsoever. These are not speculations based on speculations. These are based on what she says she heard. Translating wiretaps from 1996 to 2002. These are the some of the allegations that led the Bush administration to use the draconian state secrets privilege to shut her up for the last 5 years. She is no longer shut up. She is speaking out. But she is apparently still shut out and shut up because the corporate mainstream media, now that she's talking, don't seem to give a damn. Those tapes you've heard here for the first time on the air, I do hope you will share them far and wide. I hope you will contact your favorite media outlet and ask them why the hell they are not investigating what this FBI whistleblower has said. Do you suspect if Sybil Edmonds had said Nancy Pelosi was taking $500,000 in bribes, as she said Denny Hastert did, you suppose the media would report it then? Yeah, I think so. My thanks tonight to engineer Tony Sorrentino, producer Desi Doyen, Ben Birch at White Rose Society, Agent 99 at Bradblog, of course, KTalk AM 1150 for hosting me, Mike and Kathy Malloy for letting me sit in. Please stay tuned if you're listening on MikeMalloy.com to Head On with Bob Kincaid. My thanks to Eric Larson for helping to put together some of those Sybil Edmonds clips. We will be back here tomorrow night for the 8th anniversary of 9/11. I hope you'll join me. Until then, I will see you at bradblog.com. Good night, America.